and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, KTUU General Manager Andy McLeod, Alaska Dispatch News owner and publisher Alice Rogoff, and Alaska Public Media CEO and President Steve Lindbeck discussed the business of news at a luncheon hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. This program was recorded on January 12th at the Denina Civic and Convention Center. The three panelists were accompanied by PowerPoint presentations, which we've done our best to provide links to on our website, alaskapublic.org. Just look for the Addressing Alaskans icon on the right. And without further ado, here's the discussion.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce's Make It Monday Forum. My name is Bill Popp. I'm President and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation and a member of the Chamber Board and your moderator for today. Today, we'll hear from our distinguished panel about the business side and the economic impact the news industry generates in Anchorage and Alaska. We'll also hear about how the news industry is evolving on radio, in TV and print, and online. So now I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Andy McLeod, who is also on the Anchorage Chamber's Board of Directors. Now, Andy is President and General Manager for Northern Lights Media, better known as KTUU-TV Channel 2. Channel 2 News produces 22.5 hours of news per week that reaches over 244 Alaska communities on TV via broadcast, cable, and satellite, and is distributed digitally on mobile and internet platforms. Andy has been with Channel 2 for 29 years in various sales and sales management positions. He came to KTUU-TV after working in news and management positions for United Press International and other newspaper organizations. He has a journalism degree from the University of Colorado, and he and his wife Vanessa have two sons and are outdoor enthusiasts. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the lectern Andy McLeod.
Well, thanks, Bill, and thanks for coming here and joining us today for a discussion about media and really where the news consumer is going. Our business has never changed more than it's been changing in the last few years and will change into the future. I'm going to walk you through some national statistics and some local statistics and kind of give you a feel for that. Before I start, though, I have to tell you that nothing happens in the news business. There's no forward movement or no progress without quality people, and in recognition of the people at Channel 2 who make the journalists who make the product that the consumers use. That's the cornerstone of the business. You've got to have that. You've got to have that credibility and reliability and that bond with the user or the viewer, or none of this works. So with that, I will launch into what's happening in the market. We're a microcosm of the U.S. We're very small. We're market 147. I always say that gives us the ability to mirror what's happening nationally because of our isolation factor and our unique structure of how this market operates. There's been a record amount of capital invested in news, the GCI-KTVA recapitalization, purchase and recapitalization, the Dispatch taking over the ADN, and then Channel 2. And if you add it up, it's over $75 million. That's a lot of money for a small market. So there's a lot of opportunity that people see in this industry and that they've put up. Now, yeah, 2014 was a record political year, but that's not why those investments were made. Because 2014 was followed by 2015 and $50 barrel of oil. So things change, and those investments are really made for long-term returns. Here's a look at the industry. It's a $65 billion industry. The key points here are that three-quarters of it, or 69% of it, is advertising-supported. The other piece of it, the other quarter, is basically subscriptions, newspaper subscriptions, and then there are payments made to content providers like Channel 2 from pay TV operators, satellite and cable operators. When you look at how Americans get their news, the important points here are that they use a multitude of sources: newspaper, television, radio, tablets. But the key points and the takeaway, this happens to be a newspaper industry association data point, but the key takeaway here, and the one that I want you to remember as we drill in and look more at the consumer in the Alaska market, is that this is a national number. These are adults. 75% of Americans get news daily. And 60% of Americans under 30, which is the toughest demo to reach with news, 60% of them get it daily. And the bottom line is really the more news they consume, the better. So the more news in the marketplace, the more the Dispatch expands its coverage, the better for us. The more public radio goes out and develops products like Indie Alaska, the better it is for all of us, the more we invest, because it keeps that ecosystem healthy. So this is the interactive part of the presentation, and it's very low-tech interactive. I want to tell you a little bit, we're going to take a look at electronic media consumption. And that's TV, radio, smartphones, tablets, desktop, you know, games, all electronic media consumption. For adults, not children, for adults. And I'll make a note, too, that this is Nielsen data I'm going to show you. They count the use of a mobile phone, a smartphone, when an app is open or when the browser's open. So if you're doing texting or email, which is quite a bit of it, right, that doesn't count. But they count that as media consumption. And that's just Nielsen's world and how they do things. But so quick show of hands from everybody but the Channel 2 table, because you know this. How many hours a day does the average American adult spend with electronic media? How many think it's less than 5 hours a day? Anyone? Okay, a few. How many think it's 5 to 10 hours a day? Okay, I'd say that's probably the majority of the room. How many people think it's more than 10? Well, a substantial amount of people, okay? Well, it's a media culture that we're in to a great degree. These are national statistics for people 18 plus. This data is about 14 months old. It's 11 hours a day. And what I would draw your attention to as we drill in and look at media here is two points. I'm going to talk about TV. Live TV is at the top at 5 minutes. And then if you go down to 32 minutes, there's time-shifted TV. So Nielsen makes a differential between live TV and time-shifted TV, with live TV, frankly, being worth more than time-shifted, because the theory is time-shifted gets, is older, so you can't gain traction with a campaign all at once. And the other part of it is people skip the ads. So that's the differentiation. And live TV is where the investment nationally seems to be going with sports and news, because those are typically seen as resilient to time-shifting. As I mentioned at the start, media is changing across a variety of fronts. Pay TV is changing. 85% of the Anchorage market pays for television, and that's changing. This week, Charlie Ergen, who runs Dish, announced a 20-network streaming service for $20 a month that includes ESPN. Those are big shifts. Time shifting is changing. Fragmentation, especially in entertainment, is changing. And so when we look and we go forward and look at how does that affect news, well, in my example, I'm bundled with entertainment programming, so it has an effect. Some are obvious, and some are harder to see. Consumption is changing. This is a Pew Research, and what it basically shows you is how different generations consume news, how much. It doesn't really matter whether you got it from television, newspaper, radio, or the internet. They measure how much you do a day. And if you look at it in broad strokes, you can see that as you move from the silence to the boomers to the exodus to the millennials, it's the amount of consumption is going down. It changes throughout the years a little bit, but that's really probably just noise in the numbers and the reflective different news events and things of that nature. And it pretty much stays consistent. And the takeaway there is, if you remember what we looked at the front end, is that people, 75% of the people look at news per day, and that 60% of people under 30 do. It gives you some feedback and some direction to plan your marketing and your business strategies with. And what we hear from the consumer pretty much universally is they want better content. They want it relevant, they want perspective, they want context. They want it lighter, faster, better, and they want it on demand when they want it, on any device. Better, not necessarily more. And that, of course, that amount of change creates the opportunities that we as a company pursue and that other media companies are pursuing. Our business, we have about 103 employees, and about a little more than half of them are involved with pumping out 22 and a half hours of news a week. If you look at our revenue, a little more than half of our revenue is based on news products. And it's certainly the end of the network partnership, if you will, between NBC and us that we're able to control and direct. But if we look at people 25-54 for news, the secondary demo is people 18-49. But regardless of any adult demo, the stats will all hold about the same. In television, we reach, this is from May, we reach 82% of the people who watch local news. And 76% of that is exclusivity. And the exclusive viewerships, they'll only turn to us for news. And that's where, you know, the bet is with us. When we look into the future, we see that brand loyalty as something that we need to be able to develop and deliver across the a number of platforms, like all the other media companies out there. I mentioned that we went into a new facility. It's at Denali and 40th. It's a major move for us in that it gives us the technical ability to go in a lot of different directions. These are television ratings, and again, people 25-54, and we moved on October 1st, roughly, and so this is the first measurement of the audience. And in a competitive landscape, we've been pleased with it. We've been able to achieve 90% of the news viewership on television there. But as we started the conversation, television is not the only platform that we deliver on these days that the consumer wants, but it's also reinforced by other platforms out there. We are focusing heavily on mobile, and we have about 8.5 million page views, and the bulk of those are mobile. I'll talk about airwave and downloads a little bit later. The other thing I would draw your attention to is that that kind of delivery for us is very high because, you know, Alaska has 720,000 people in it. And if you say, well, how many are adult news consumers? Probably 400,000. So that gives you an idea of our reach into the market with digital and what the consumer's doing and how much they're consuming. And I should say, in this month, 67% of our page views were from inside Alaska. In most months, we do 7 to 8 million page views, and it's in the upper 70s, 77%, 78% are from in Alaska. So that's where we focus, and that's where we've had our strongest traction. The other thing I'd mention here, too, is Facebook. When Facebook first came out, I could not figure it out for so long. And I'm not sure I still have figured it out, other than I know it is an integral part of our success. I know that the consumer wants to communicate with us, and we have to communicate back to them with Facebook, and how interactive that is, and whether it's, you know, a coffee mug for the morning edition, or whether it is a news tip that tells you, you know, what's happening in rural Alaska somewhere. Facebook is integral to us. So that's a look at those numbers. I mentioned the streaming airwaves. Streaming is a rapidly growing mechanism for people to receive content. And if you look at, you've probably seen the data reports from the telecom industry that, you know, 80% of what's streamed out there is video. And so we have entered that area with airwave. That's a product that gives you basically the ability to, you can stream the news if you want on a device, but more importantly, you can go back five, it's a DVR in the cloud, so you can go back 5 days and pull out different, you can scrub it and pull out different pieces of news that you might have seen or were told about. And so it's just another step in that whole process of giving the consumer the content when they want it, how they want it, that we're focused on. Well, what's ahead? You know, as a media company, we're driven to stay with the consumer. That's what we spend our time focusing on and asking ourselves those questions, and to deliver better integration with digital platforms, and to add product as we go. And some of the product that we've added this year is we have renewed the Alaska Political Pipeline with veteran journalist Steve McDonald to go another year. We think we launched that last year at the height of the political activity, and we think that as things go forward and as Alaska shifts to look at, you know, frankly, a $3.5 billion deficit, there'll be a lot of interest in politics, and basically this fills that Sunday morning genre, although we also air it Sunday night to get more exposure to it. Other things you'll see us do, we just announced a deal with NBC Sports Cable to produce a one-hour documentary that will air March 31st on nationwide on the Iron Dog. And that's really a function of taking content that we do massive coverage locally, so we're taking that content and repurposing it for other markets. So, you know, at the end of the day, as I wrap up here, I would tell you that what we do as a news company is really the basics. Maintain that bond with the consumer, deliver them reliable, trustworthy content that they need on any platform. And we also constantly look at the business and say, how do we take what we have and change it and get more content to more people on more platforms? So, thank you. And I'll turn it over to Alice.
So I get to do, first of all, thank you, Andy. And now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Alice Rogoff. Now, Ms. Rogoff is publisher and owner of Alaska Dispatch Publishing, which produces the leading journalism site, ADN.com, and the printed newspaper, Alaska Dispatch News. From 1985 to 1997, Ms. Rogoff was chief financial officer of U.S. News and World Report. She also worked at the Washington Post Company as an assistant to the publisher, Donald Graham. Ms. Rogoff was the creator of the national weekly edition of the Washington Post. From 1978 to 1980, Ms. Rogoff served in the administration of President Jimmy Carter as a special assistant to the director of the Office of Management and Budget. She holds a Master of Business Administration from Harvard Business School. Alice became majority owner of Alaska Dispatch in 2009, at which time she moved the organization into a hangar located at Anchorage's Merrill Field Airport, where Rogoff, a licensed pilot, also houses her Cessna 206. During the Iditarod sled dog race, Rogoff serves as the chief pilot for Alaska Dispatch reporters covering the race. Her mission is to create a sustainable and high-quality news source for Alaskans. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the lectern, Alice Rogoff.
And I have to acknowledge Andy McLeod as a fellow pilot. It's a strong bond we have up there in the air. Okay, let's see if I can make the clicker work. There we go. This is the counterpoint to Andy's presentation, which was great, and I thank you for all that good data on the industry. We're really talking to you today just about the basic business model of our company, and it is basic. I'm telling you, the lemonade stand isn't much more basic as a concept. We deliver the news as best we can. We are not perfect. We aim to be fair, balanced, and not partisan, and not biased. Some people think we get that right. Some people think we don't. Some people think we need to give more opinions than we do. I don't know if any of you read Paul Jenkins' column yesterday. That was an interesting one for me to digest. The point is this. We are in the business of recounting the news as filtered by our editors. But what I'm going to show you today is the place at which we are going to change up that business model and try something different that hasn't been done in Alaska before. In fact, it isn't really being done in many places yet. So let me just jump forward. I'm going to do this quickly. Sponsored content. Now, there are all kinds of words for this. Sometimes it used to be called advertorial. I remember in the old days, whenever you saw a pink-tinted insert in your newspaper or magazine and the grammar was a little bit stilted, it was usually a supplement from the government of Korea. Now, they've gotten better since then. That's how the tradition started. The advertiser produced, wrote, often printed, their own content. And we, the deliverer of the news, would staple it into the magazine or insert it into the newspaper. Well, that concept is getting refined for what we think is today's appetite for custom news. And by custom, I don't mean on a particularly narrow subject, but I mean selected for its relevance by the people who will pay for it directly, which are the businesses, the advertisers, the economic system of the place where you're covering the news. You may not realize this, but these that you're looking at right here are Alaska content selected for the business community to want to support by our business side of the company.
Right here, Alice Rogoff is referring to a slide displaying Alaska Dispatch News magazines 61 Degrees North and Pulse.
Let's take 61 North for an example. I hope you all appreciated that beautiful cover photo this winter. It was shot on my dock. Ozarks decorated the Christmas tree. It was all a wonderful staged local business. We are hoping to take that magazine and develop it into, over time, a more frequent and broader-based magazine with content selected by an editor who will not report to our news editors. Now, how many of you know the name Maya Nolan? Probably a good number of you. Maya is not here today, unfortunately. She couldn't make it. But Maya has had a wonderful and, for this purpose, perfectly structured career. She's been a writer, she's been a blogger, she's been a reporter, she's been an editor, and she's worked in an advertising agency. So she put all of those elements together and decided she wanted to go down this wonderful road with us, where 61 North and other new products we'll tell you about in a minute are going to be edited, structured, developed for the business community. So if there were somebody out here who came to me tomorrow and said, I have, just pick a number, $100,000 with which to develop content on a subject or from a perspective or with special pictures that I know is valuable to me, the advertiser, Maya will then edit it and develop it. Totally upfront. Believe it or not, even our news editors are happy with this. 61 Degrees North has been running as a quarterly. The next issue comes out in March. It closes, Robbie, in 3 weeks. Okay. This time, the content will be focused on the real estate business because we, in the absence of having had the real estate business come to us and say, please focus on us, we made the command decision that the real estate business was deserving of this issue because it's an undercovered business. And we are going to try to include kinds of content that are of particular interest to people when they think about the real estate business. So it's real estate, the buying and selling of properties, also the staging of homes. Some of you might know Robbie and I have a side interest in that subject. Managing student debt and the effect that that has on home ownership and all the other related economic content of real estate. So where does this all lead? Well, we think that it leads to several kinds of new editorial features. Now, I use that word editorial loosely because that is a word I've begun to realize that gets confused a lot. Sometimes it means news, sometimes it means opinion writing, and in the way I just used it, it means content. So I'm trying to banish myself from using that word interchangeably. In the news business, we have always talked about business and editorial as if the church-state line divided. We of the great unwashed who worry about making money, and those on the other side who think they're purists and don't have to worry about making money. But we are trying to meld it all into one and develop new features that will include perhaps something like Businesses of the Week, where we and or our advertisers get to select the businesses to be featured. How that will run in the newspaper, where it will be juxtaposed against the news coverage, is to be worked out. You can imagine that raises some tricky issues. The same may be true of supplements, which would do the same, where they'll appear inside the newspaper along with both news supplements and advertising supplements. So just bear in mind that all of this is coming. We hope to do it as quickly as we can. It's not that we're delaying, but that things take a little bit of time when you're a thinly staffed organization, as all of us in this state are. So I'm going to stop there. You all feel free to think about it. Robbie can give you details on the ad giveaway, and we'll come back to you for questions if you have any. And over to my good friend Steve Lindbeck.
Thank you, Alice.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with KTUU General Manager Andy McLeod, Alaska Dispatch News owner and publisher Alice Rogoff, and Alaska Public Media CEO and President Steve Lindbeck. They're discussing the business of news at a luncheon hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. This talk was recorded January 12th at the Denina Civic and Convention Center.
And now I'd like to introduce our final speaker, Steve Lindbeck. Now, Steve is CEO and General Manager of Alaska Public Media, which includes KAKM-TV, Alaska Public Television, and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Steve came to public broadcasting in July 2007 after a 30-year career in journalism and public affairs. He came to Alaska Public Media from the University of Alaska Anchorage, where he served 2 years as Vice Chancellor for Advancement. He served previously as Associate Editor of the Anchorage Daily News, Sports Editor of the Anchorage Times, and Copy Editor of the Boston Globe, among others. He won the John S. Knight Professional Journalism Fellowship at Stanford University in 1985-86. An Anchorage resident since 1968, he is a graduate of West High School and Stanford University. He is married to Patty Ginsburg, a former journalist, and they enjoy the cultural splendor of Alaska. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Lindbeck.
Well, thank you, Bill. Note to self, try not to follow the two biggest, best-funded, most impressive media organizations in Alaska, if I can help it. But I hope I can sort of highlight a few of the issues. I live and work in a pretty different climate in many ways, but in the same market as my friends at the Dispatch News and Channel 2. What I think that we do with public media, which is very much motivated by philanthropic energies rather than commercial energies in our community. And I think I would bet that virtually everybody in this room is generally aware of public media, public broadcasting. And I would bet that many of you, as a percentage of the population, there's a higher percentage in this room of people who are supporters in a philanthropic way of the work we do, than perhaps in the broad population as a whole, but you might be surprised at how high that is. We live and die by, most importantly, whether the people in our community stand up and reach into their pockets and send their hard-earned dollars on a voluntary basis, as opposed to buying a subscription or purchasing an advertisement and so forth. We have people who basically come forward and say, we love what you do and we want to support it. So that's kind of one of the chief distinctions in terms of the business impact and how we operate. We also, I would like to add, have terrific relationships with our colleagues at the Dispatch News and Channel 2. And I am personally kind of excited, maybe we'll highlight this as we go forward, of some of the options where we might be able to collaborate to provide better service to Alaskans as we all go forward. Allison and Andy and I have had these conversations a number of times, and I think it's a fruitful area, which we're all struggling for the time and the attention and the energy to make more good things happen in media. So let me see if I can just go quickly, because what I'd like to do is save a few minutes at the end for a unique product that we have, that that Andy mentioned a minute ago, called Indie Alaska, and I have a little clip for Indie Alaska to show you. People ask me, what is Alaska Public Media? One of the things we've suffered from over the years is that we have a confusion of brands. We have KSKA Radio, KAKM Television, Alaska Public Radio Network, and now we operate a network of three of the public television stations in Alaska. We're building a master brand called Alaska Public Media, and I can't resist the impulse to mention to you that we missed a whole lot of opportunity in this last year because we did not have one single political spot on the air. That was a decision we made that we didn't think it would be good for our brand to corrupt ourselves as much money as might have been involved with partisan advertising. We are strictly nonpartisan. We want to be known as strictly nonpartisan. There are public broadcasters who have found a way around the rules of the FCC to do non-commercial political spots, but we've decided we didn't want to do it. This is just a quick hit on how you can find us on the radio waves. KSKA FM 91.1, I hope you all know all about it and have it tuned exclusively on your radio dials. It is one of and often the most listened to stations in Anchorage, and a lot of people don't realize that. The Alaska Public Radio Network is a network of 26 independently owned and operated stations. KSKA and KNBA in Anchorage are the biggest of the two of them, apart from KUAC in Fairbanks. But they're all over the state, and there's 26 of us producing tremendous work in virtually all those communities. Collectively, there's a news force of pretty close to 45 or so journalists working in those places, and they're doing tremendous work. You can live stream us, and you can get podcasts. Don't try to memorize this. I make this slide only to point out that there are now literally a dozen ways to find video content that used to go really from one tower and transmitter out over KAKM television. And this is the profusion of media that we're all dealing with. We're trying to figure out how to provide the material, the content that we love, on the many, many platforms that are expected of us and that all have their own sets of problems and expenses. Public broadcasting, briefly, I mentioned the 26 stations around the state, Alaska Public Media and how it fits. It's overall pretty close to a $20 million industry. Again, the numbers don't grab your attention as much as some of our commercial colleagues, but for us, it's a good and growing operation. 26 stations in the radio that are affiliated. There are four public television stations, which in a population size of our state is very challenging. You wouldn't find it anywhere else, but because of the geographic spread, of course, we need to do it here. In many of those communities, public radio, especially, is the only source of news and information and emergency preparedness. Very important source across rural Alaska, and I need to emphasize that. Alaska Public Media is, as I said, KAKM Channel 7, KSKA 91.1, the Alaska Public Radio Network that we operate, and the shared service television network that we operate. So with a budget of just under $7 million, we operate two stations and two networks. I think I'll dispense with some of the, I'll go quickly through some of these bigger issues in digital. And if we had traded notes a bit earlier, I would have made this presentation to begin before you heard from Andy and Alice about the particular answers to these sets of problems that they've developed. But I find it kind of interesting to kind of step back and take the broad view. Digital media are everywhere. It could not have been said 10 years ago. And I would say that I used to have on this slide, it said legacy media are ? And I don't have to tell my friend Alice the difficult circumstances that newspapers faced when advertising revenues went like this for 50, 60 years, and then in 2000 started dropping like that. But in fact, legacy media are still here, and I do not believe they're going away. And I'm very excited by what I see at the Alaska Dispatch now and some of the energy and changes that are coming along. I found this morning, as of Friday, Pew Research had distributed a report saying 81% of American adults now use the internet. 71% of them are on Facebook, and 52% of them are on two or more social media platforms. So all the other ones besides Facebook are growing, you know, dramatically. Facebook's not growing as fast as it was because it's so big now. Mobile platforms are the big new deal. We could find lots, if we had the time, we could go through lots of data on how mobile, how being able to find things on your mobile dial is taking over. It's the thing that's kind of on the top of my to-do list for this year, is to get really ahead of that problem. It's a big challenge and opportunity for us. The breakdown of business models, we talked about. Fragmentation of audiences, we've talked about. Competition is more or less infinite in media now. Anybody with access to the internet can put up almost anything at almost no cost. And so the problems are really pretty big for those of us in legacy media trying to compete against all that. I love this one little story that I'll tell myself, but first, Amazon Now, which Amazon began as a book-selling retailer online, and it today sells more books in digital form than it does in printed form. Interesting. The story on myself is I was at this lecture and actually speaking to Rotary about a year ago, and I made the point that look what iTunes did to the music business. Blew it up. And I continued on my talk, and I had my cell phone in front of me, and a friend of mine in the crowd had sent me an email. And I looked at it, and it said, yeah, but look what the cloud did to iTunes. And he's exactly right. These platforms and these digital and other business models are changing so quickly that it's very challenging to keep up with it. Andy made the point that news is an ecosystem. The more we do, the better off we all are, and I believe that's true. So what are we trying to do? We're building this master brand called Alaska Public Media. It incorporates all those platforms. It incorporates a philanthropic mindset for how we operate, how we make a difference in our community. I believe that there is a very strong brand, maybe one of the strongest brands in our community, of people who know what it means to say public broadcasting. They have a sense that it's authentic, it's high quality content, and it's trusted content. When we answer the phone at pledge drives, the thing we hear most often, if you ask somebody, why do you want to give your hard-earned dollars to public broadcasting? Most often what they'll say is, we trust it. Convergence is the term of basically the need to deliver the product wherever people want it and whenever they want it, on their schedule, not ours, radio, TV, online, social, mobile, et cetera. Content, we do both local and statewide through our local stations and our statewide networks. We're at work on a kind of a renewal. There were some tough years in our KKM station when we didn't have the capability to do very much local production. And we are building it now. It's going very well. In 1 week from today, we will be bringing aboard three new staffers to add more video content with what we're calling a road team. It'll be people that'll be able to access events and activities anywhere in the road system and provide great stuff for you. And finally, community engagement. Let me come to that. The ideal program for us would be something that could be on air, online, and have an in-person engagement event of some kind. As an example, we had a film on KAKM along with a series. It happened to be good timing because the president announced some initiatives in immigration reform the same week as there was a public television national program on that. And the following week, we held a discussion moderated by our news director, Lori Townsend. That's an example. If we could do that every other day, I believe we would have a tremendous impact. We do have tremendous impact, and that's one of the best examples of how we do it. Cohesive schedule events. We hold a lot of public events in the community. If you pay attention, you'll see where to find them. We've hit on a thing this year that's connected to our Create channel, and that is foodies love the cooking shows. They are delighted to see Chef Lydia or others come to town, and we've had tremendous turnout at these events. We have co-promotional relationships with dozens and dozens and dozens of other institutions in the community, from the Alaska Zoo to the FBI, I like to say, and many, 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 many others in between. There's a whole lot. I mentioned social media. Our numbers aren't what we saw at Channel 2, but we've got a pretty strong following on Facebook. Another example would be a great festival we held of world music, actually in our own studio, in partnership with the World Affairs Council, and there was tremendous activity and event. And for those of you that pay attention to travel shows, a spoiler alert, Rick Steves is coming to town in the fall, so watch for that. Okay, let me just rush through this because I think I'd like to take the last few minutes to show this video. Indie Alaska is a program we've developed over the last year and a half now, and it is intended to begin on the web, and it's available through the YouTube channel, and there are about 60-some episodes now of Indie Alaska. This was the first one, and we're going to roll it here. It goes about 4 minutes, and that'll take us just about to our end. But I'd like to alert you to something. You won't want to because the visuals are so terrific, but you could close your eyes and listen and hear this thing in an audio format as well as a video format. It never occurred to me to do that because I love the visuals so much, but it is designed so that it can be on the web, on radio, on television, and on mobile platforms as they emerge. So let's roll tape and close with this.
I can go out in the forest, climb mountains, go hiking, go skiing in the winter, and enjoy being outside, enjoy being in nature, but going underwater gives me a whole
The speaker
new
is a fellow named Bill Strever, who wrote a book called Cold.
We're in beautiful Summit Lake, Alaska, at about 1,300 feet, roughly halfway between Seward and Anchorage. It's ice diving season, so we've got a hole cut in the ice. So we're looking at about 18 inches or so of ice right now. And the ice underneath is very smooth and very clear. The ice closer to the surface has snow entrained with the ice, so it's white and it's opaque. It's almost like looking through a very, very thick piece of glass with some white translucent filters behind it. And in that thick piece of glass, you see things like bubbles. And as the ice thickens, it keeps trapping more and more bubbles over weeks and weeks of time. Really interesting to look at from underneath. My diving history goes way back. I learned to dive when I was, 14 years old, and I was diving in lakes in Georgia that had terrible visibility, nothing to see, and I loved every minute of it. Well, diving in Alaska is a lot better than diving in Georgia, I'll give it that. Diving in Georgia is called, I call it desperation diving. You're only doing it to get underwater. So everybody comes from all over the world. They come to Alaska to see our mountains, to see our wildlife. Another side of that is to see our diving, because we really do have fantastic diving in the state of Alaska. This is the longest I've ever lived anywhere. I feel, you know, everybody wants to say I'm an Alaskan. I guess you're not truly an Alaskan unless you were born here, and I wasn't born here, but I'm at home in Alaska. My son Ish, or Ishmael, he came to Alaska when he was only about 4 years old. I'm a big fan of the book Moby Dick, and it means a lot to me because Ishmael was sort of this seagoing philosopher constantly reflecting about life and having adventures with Captain Ahab and the Great White Whale. And I spend a lot of time thinking about how I'm next going to get out on my next adventure, I suppose you would say. Ish sees himself as a big city kid. And you know, it's interesting, he's never lived in the big city, but he sees himself as a big city kid, and he would love to move to New York or to Chicago or L.A. I definitely think Alaska can be a very tough place for kids, especially kids that are not real enamored with the outdoors. He's his own man. I think he needs to do what's right for him, just like I did what's right for me.
Well, when you're ready.
Okay.
Oh, ready?
Yeah. One, two.
More than anything else, I think I'm afraid of getting into a routine existence. It's just too easy to stop trying to do different things and to fall into a routine of a kind of a 9-to-5 job or something like that. But I've seen that in other people that I care about, other people that I know, my parents, for example, and I don't want my life to go that way. I think if you're spending a lot of time sitting around worrying about whether or not you're happy, you're probably not. You know, it's more something that comes to you without trying. And if you're trying, it's just probably means that something's missing. Alaska is kind of a blue-collar state. For some people, that translates into a redneck state, snow machines and guns and beer. But that's definitely not the full truth. I actually find Alaskans to be very open-minded and generally very thoughtful people and also very well-educated people.
All right, walking upside down on the ice underwater. We don't do that every
day. Come here and spend a summer. Spend a winter if you can. Get to know Alaska. Get to know the people. Spend a lot of time outdoors. It will change your life.
Thank you. Watch for Indie Alaska.
Thank you, Steve. I think we're going to stretch the rules a little bit and go for a couple of questions at least. So please hold your hand up in the air. The microphone will come to you if you have questions. I know I've got at least one, but I want to save it in case some of you don't ask it. So let's get that question up. Come on. Okay, right there.
This is a question really for, I guess, any of you guys, probably more KTUU and ADN, but it seems like anymore with the news, it's all about sensationalizing and, you know, making the news. It's less news and more, I guess, entertainment to, you know, get people to listen. How are you guys? I noticed, though, that I don't see that so much with KTUU, which I think is great. How have you guys, I mean, have you had to change the way that you do your news, or have you, how do you respond to that, or how have you, I guess, responded to that changing news?
Andy?
Okay, thank you. Excuse me, clear my throat before I answer. You know, it really comes down to the philosophy of the news director, for the journalists, and for the company that work there. We try to just be straight shooters and run it down the line, long haul players. And we think that at the end of the day, it is the credibility you have and the bond you have with the user that is the asset of the company, if you will, as it regards that. Alice?
Is this on?
Yes.
Can you hear me? I don't think of us as sensationalizing, so it's interesting to hear you say that. I know that what we've done on purpose is to add a lot more local Alaska news. Sorry, did you want to clarify that?
Here, the audience member clarifies she's not saying ADN sensationalizes the news.
Well, it's a conscious choice, but it's not my doing every day. That's what editors do. And on purpose, they don't tell me about the making of the news product every day because I'm on the great unwashed side of the equation. Having said that, I do think there's always a tension between how you cover local crime stories and say not so much or not in as much detail or not as prominently and the more in-depth pieces. And that's something I know we all struggle with all the time. I'm sure Andy does too. People say they don't want to hear so much of it, but at the end of the day, we all do want to hear it. So it's an ongoing dilemma. Steve doesn't have that problem.
Well, I want to speak on behalf of my colleagues here in this one. So public broadcasting is, on all the credibility surveys, sort of ranks at the top as trusted and authentic. The things that we want to be known for, we are known for, and I think it's good. But here's what I want to say, and as somebody who's been around the news business in Anchorage since literally 1971 on a professional basis, and who spent a lot of my career at the old Anchorage Daily News, I think we should feel kind of good in this town that the institutions, you know, I mentioned earlier that KSKA, News and Public Affairs Radio, tagline Life Informed, is either the most or almost the most listened to station in Anchorage over many, many years ahead of all 30 or so others. And that Channel 2 and the Daily News and now the Dispatch News have set the pace in our community for journalism that's high quality over all these many years, and they have survived commercially and flourished commercially for doing that. So I think it may not be as bad a picture as it feels some days, because here we have some pretty high quality work being done in our community and it being recognized by the community.
You know, I want to follow up on that question, taking a little moderator's license here. It was interesting to me that, you know, when we talk about the sensationalism of news and where the line starts to blur between news and gossip and absolute sensationalism, it was interesting to me this morning, as an avid public radio listener, to hear the fact that a leading story on statewide news this morning is that a noted political blog had announced on Sunday that it was going out of business. for personal professional development. AmandaCoyne.com will no longer be on the web. So how do you address that particular issue? Because obviously it was a very successful column, so much so that it made the lead on the morning news today that it was going away. And is that a space that current media needs to fill now that there's a vacuum, or is that even attractive to the media outlets that are currently represented up here?
Well, I just want to go on record as saying, as many of you know, Amanda used to be married to Tony Hopfinger, and therefore she was like a member of my family for a long time, and I think the world of her. And I say kudos to Amanda. I think she invented a new form of journalism that hadn't been done, certainly not as well as she does it in Alaska. Somebody else has to come along and try and do something equally clever. I don't think there is another Amanda, having said that.
Okay. There may be somebody, however, who will have their own style and their own approach and their own ability to build a niche in the market. From my point of view, it illustrates sort of a trend in media, generally, that things are more personal than ever. Amanda had a personal brand as opposed to an institutional brand. And, you know, I imagine everybody in the room could make their own judgments about, you know, how she did and what she's going to do in her next incarnation. But I think, like Alice, that there's a decent chance somebody will step up and fill that space or a space similar to it with something interesting. I don't know what it's going to be.
Andy, anything to add, or are you going to wave off on that one?
I would just say that opportunity is there, and opportunity will be filled.
Any bloggers here?
So I think for the political junkies in the room, there is hope. Let's give a round of applause for our panel. What a great discussion today.
You've been listening to a discussion entitled The Business of News on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans. This talk was recorded on January 12th at the Denina Center. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. Until next week, I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.